Thanks for listening to the Shift Your Spirits podcast. I'm your host, Slade Robertson. For 11 years, I've been a professional intuitive and the author of the blog Shift Your Spirits, where I try to write about spirituality with fewer hearts and flowers than most New Age blather. I also mentor emerging intuitives, psychics, and healers in a program called Automatic Intuition. It is the Saturday before New Year's Eve as I record this, the first episode of 2018, a really appropriate show to start the new year as we're all in the mode of resetting our intentions. I'm sure some of those intentions are around finances. This week, I'm sharing an interview with money goddess and financial alchemist Morgana Ray. She is teaching us how to reboot our relationships with the archetypes of both money and love, actually. Morgana says all money issues are love issues. There are tons of great quotes like that in this show. As I was editing, I was making motivational share graphic memes in my mind. And of course, as always, there's an oracle segment at the end of the show. So be thinking about a question or a concern you have. Hold it in your mind, and I'll come back on after the final links and credits and leave you with that extra message. Before I forget, I want to say a quick thank you to Anna Romero and Cammie Butcher, my newest supporters on Patreon. I appreciate all of you who have pledged your support, and I'm really excited to see the new names each week. It demonstrates that you're enjoying the show and you want it to continue. That's very encouraging to me, so thank you. Listeners who support the show on Patreon can access bonus Q&A episodes where you guys send in questions, I record answers to them, and they go out to patrons of the show exclusively. There's also a level of support with a guided meditation, messages from your spirit guides, and a new mastery level of support where you can download one of my courses for free each month. This month, the featured course is Manifest Anything. To find out how you can become a patron, support my time in producing this show, and access all the extra bonus content, please go to patreon.com/shiftyourspirits. Okay, let's get into our interview segment. Morgana Ray is an international number one best-selling author and sought-after teacher and retreat leader with over 21 years as a leader in personal development. She's widely regarded to be the world's leading relationship with money coach. I credit Morgana with having a transformational impact on my own mindset around money and my ability to make Shift Your Spirits a success as a business. I greatly admire her, and you are about to hear why.
Hi, my name is Morgana Ray. I have been a life and business success coach since 1996, and I started out working with people in Hollywood and movie stars and producers and directors. And then something took a turn around 2003 when I became really well known for my unique and weird approach to coaching relationship with money. And I gotta say, your wealth is in your weirdness. Because the way I approach relationship with money, there was nothing else like that out there. And there was so much desire for what I was saying that I kind of pivoted and made that what I call my pain door, like the entryway for transformation. So I'm sure I'll be talking about how I approach transforming your relationship with money from this monster of scarcity into this honey of love and abundance. And FYI, when I talk about relationship with money, and believe me, my clients have made so many millions of dollars over the years and tens of millions of dollars. And it's really interesting watching the arc of my career and how the numbers have been getting progressively bigger and bigger over the years. So yeah, my stuff is really good for cash. And full disclosure, my work actually has nothing to do with money. When I'm teaching and talking about relationship with money, I'm really talking about your relationship with life. I've just found that money and our money pains and our money issues are a really useful metaphor for the deepest, darkest, most tender vulnerabilities in our relationship with life. Namely, our relationship with money is a reflection of our own feelings about our own lovability, our own worth, and our safety in the world. So that's what I do.
Oh, wonderful. The people who have been following me for the last 12 years have heard me speak about you many times, I'm sure. Listen, I have to tell you how I discovered you. I heard you on a radio show with Dr. Meg Blackburn-Losey back in 2006. Do you remember her?
Yes. My God, that was so long ago.
I know. Yeah. So I had just launched Shift Your Spirits as a blog, and I was pretty broke at the time. And I was reinventing my entire life. I didn't even know at how much I can look back at 2006 and see it as this major milestone, just fork in the road. And of course, you know, I'm no stranger to communicating with spirit entities, but what a lot of people don't even realize about that is, for me, communicating with the archetypes in particular is something that I've done almost my entire life. I mean, I'm one of those people who I personify everything. My cars have names. My computers have names.
I get it.
Yeah, yeah. So when I heard you ask that question, if money were a person, who would money be? That, I was like, I know exactly what she's doing. And I just immediately went into that sort of automatic writing practice that I had and my sort of spiritual dialoguing. And I went there. I mean, I got it almost 100%. And, you know, I can honestly tell you that I can trace a lot of the success of this brand and platform that I've created to that part of the process. I mean, you were definitely an impact. And I know that you've told the story a lot of times about how that kind of, I call something like that a shining sentence, like one of those things that just lands in your lap. You know, it's a divinely communicated concept or a name or a title. And I was wondering if you would speak a little bit about when that first appeared to you, that concept. How did that come about?
Okay. Well, first of all, it was not elegant, and I was not wearing white robes and meditating and feeling peaceful. It's more a great cosmic joke. And by the way, to anybody listening who has been struggling and feeling like a failure or a loser or hopeless, congratulations, especially if you're somebody who's been doing everybody's programs and doing what you're told you're supposed to do, like going to school, getting good grades, hiring a coach, doing what you're told, and you're still getting crap results. I am a member of that club. And I have come to a couple of conclusions being on this planet for a while. If you are doing everything you're supposed to be doing, you know, and you're putting in your best effort, and by the way, the universe does not require perfection. It does not require perfection. Let's say you're just giving it your best effort and it just doesn't make sense why you're still not seeing results, whether it's in money or career or love or health, and you're feeling hated and discouraged and all that kind of stuff. I believe, from my experience of coaching many, many, many thousands of people over the last couple of decades, that when that's going on, you are protecting yourself from this result. You are unconsciously protecting yourself from what you are consciously pursuing. And by the way, there are always really, really good reasons. You are not a loser. You're actually quite successful at protecting yourself from a perceived threat. And we need to uncover that so we can do something about it. And then there's also the possibility that you are birthing something new. So that was what was going on with me. I had my vision board and I had my affirmations, and I am a good student. Like, you know, National Merit Scholar, honors in college, and, you know, taking that good girl student to, like, getting all these certifications and coaching and also being really, really good at marketing and still managing, despite every possible advantage, to make only $100 a month living in Los Angeles, one of the most expensive cities in the world. And this was even after helping, like, new actors and new writers and new directors become celebrities. So I had a reputation. People wanted to hire me. And it was like I had superhuman powers to, like a martial artist, to evade getting paid. Really, really impressive and devastating, to the point that, you know, I just kept taking more classes thinking that, oh, the next class, and then I'll be able to get paid, because also there, I've got this big integrity thing, so I don't want to charge unless I know I can deliver. So I kept getting more coaching certifications and better and better results for clients. And then I would take marketing classes. And I remember back in, I probably 2002, taking a class on overcoming sales objections. And for those who don't know what that is, there are classes that will teach you what to say when somebody says, I can't afford it, or I don't have time, or I have to think about it. You know, there are scripts for that. And being a really good student, I would parry, you know, these concerns that clients had, and they would say yes, they would hire me. And here's the rub. 7 times in a row. Really think about that. 7 times in a row, people said they would hire me. And then they didn't show up and they hadn't paid. Mm. And after the 7th time, I just ran out of hope. That it was like the rug of my psychological well-being was just ripped out from under me. And I plunged into despair. And I remember being in my little one-bedroom apartment and, you know, pulling close those blackout drapes and just, you know, getting on my bed and screaming. I was in so much pain. I was so hurt and frightened and angry and outraged because I had done everything and I still wasn't moving forward, and it felt so unfair. And it felt like this sadistic cosmic joke that I finally, after all these years, had figured out what I'm here to do, which is to help people. And I was actually really good at it. In fact, better than a lot of the coaches I knew who were making a lot of money. So I discovered in that moment that I have the capacity to feel superior and inferior at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I really just wanted to die. Mm-hmm. And I'm really honest about that. I'm actually, you can't see it, but I'm actually crying right now because, money is a really personal thing. It represents our right to survive and the worth that we in society puts on us. And then if you dig even deeper, it feels like our lovability, because our parents were our first experience of money. They fed us, they clothed us, they told us what we were worth. These are the roles that money takes later on. So, by the way, sidebar, any parent issues you have are going to show up in your relationship with money. So here I am, back to my tale of woe, and I'm just lying on the bed and crying and screaming, and I'm hating the universe and I'm feeling deeply hated by the universe back. And when I cried myself out, and, you know, to my law of attraction friends, don't cheat yourself out of the depth of your despair. It's very, very useful because it gives you something to push off of. Let yourself just sink to the bottom of the pool. When I cried myself out, I had 2 thoughts. One was that for me, Morgana from Southern California, that money had to be my next area of spiritual growth, mostly because I'm named Morgana, and I'm from Southern California, so spirituality kind of comes easy to me. Mm-hmm. I don't have the same conflicted feelings around spirituality that I have say about money, being this person who wants to be a good person and all that. And I also got curious about what the heck was going on inside of me that couldn't be with money. I just had that idea. What's going on inside of me that can't be with money? Because like Ivy League education, great results for clients, a golden tongue for marketing. It really just didn't make sense. So there was something going on the inside. And very soon after, like within a day or two, I had a session with my coach. Now get this, I'm making $100 a month, so I can't even pay rent. But I always made sure that I had a coach, thank God. And my coach, out of the blue, and by the way, I still think he's, you know, one of the greatest coaches ever. And this poor guy, you know, just month after month telling me to do stuff, and I was doing things and nothing was happening. And then he had this out of the blue moment of brilliance that changed my life forever. And so I come to the call and I'm in this dark place, and he asked me, and this is where you may want to lean in or pull out your pen. He asked me, if your money was a person, who would your money be? And because I was so fortunate as to be so close to my pain and so raw, that I spontaneously saw my money personified as this big, scary, dirty, violent biker dude who terrified me. Mm-hmm. And before I made money a person, I had no idea that I had those feelings about money. I didn't know that it was dirty or scary or caused fights. Actually, once I took a look at that, yeah, you know, family members, stolen inheritances, people not talking to each other for decades, and things that happened as a child that I, in a very reasonable, healthy way, compartmentalized. Because I've always been a person who, if it's a choice between money and relationship, you know, I choose love and relationship, which is a very healthy decision until it starts to not be. But anyway, so I see this biker and I experience how I feel about him. And by the way, this is crucial. It wasn't an intellectual exercise. It was a full body experience where I realized, I could see in my mind's eye that if I were at a live event with this guy, like I saw myself at like this outdoor event, I would have my eye on him constantly to create maximum distance between us. And I had one of those big light bulb moments in that instant. Oh my God, that's what I was doing with money. So while I was tirelessly taking classes, marketing my heart out, having enrollment conversations, doing everything I was supposed to be doing, and with the vision boards and the millionaire mindset and the taglines and the affirmations and all that, I was creating maximum distance between myself and money because it was dangerous. And ultimately could kill me. And that's really dark stuff. And it was really clear to me that I could not have money in my life if that guy was my money. Because when it's a person, it becomes real in a way that, like, I know a lot of my peers talk about relationship with money. It's become actually a very popular topic in the, you know, over the last 15, 16 years that I've been doing this. But when they talk about money, they talk about ideas. Like, I think Harv Eker has a list of, you know, rich people beliefs, poor people beliefs, and all of that is very interesting, but that's very surface level. I don't personally believe in, say, a millionaire mindset, but I believe in a millionaire heart set. And the mind will follow the heart. So because this biker felt so scary to me, I knew I couldn't possibly have money in my life if this was my relationship with money. So the biker and I had to break up. I had to get rid of him. And my coach pointed out that he wasn't too happy either. So we ended that. And by the way, I don't teach it that way anymore. I just lucked out. my process has become a lot more bloodthirsty. I just follow what works for clients and what produces the most dramatic, powerful results. But we can get to that later.
okay.
So I got rid of the monster. That's the important part. And that created a new problem. Because I lived in Los Angeles. And I just got rid of my relationship with money. And that wasn't going to last very long. And I didn't want the monster to come back. I didn't call it a monster then. I called him the biker, but he was monstrous. So I was aware of this emptiness, this vacuum that I needed to fill really quickly before the biker came back to fill it. So I thought to myself, who could I want in my life so much that I would be willing to have a relationship with this person, even if it's money? And this is a really important frame, because if you've ever been in a horrible relationship, you know that you're not in a hurry to jump into that again. So I was feeling really burnt and gun shy, and probably would have preferred to stay single and money free if that had been an option. So it had to be a person first, the relationship first, not the cash. The relationship can never be based on, you know, do this for me or what have you done for me lately? And because that becomes a money monster again, that takes away your power and makes you dependent. And that's a money monster dynamic. So back to my story. I asked myself, well, who could I want in my life so much that I would be willing to maybe have this person in my life, even though it's money? Because I was feeling very careful. And hallelujah, because I came to the process so in touch with my pain. The monster was so real and the monster was so gone. It was possible to have this immediate experience of a very real feeling new person, like presto. And so the new person who popped in, the archetype that I call the money honey, happened to be this tall, dark, handsome, clean cut, young, safe, romantic young man in a tuxedo holding a bouquet of red flowers and in love with me. And by the way, that just popped into my consciousness, and I was as surprised as anybody. The flowers, the romance, and the idea of money being in love with me was weird. I had never thought that way before, but he felt so real. And this is really important. I also felt how vulnerable he was. Like, he really loved me, and I had been breaking his heart for years. I have found, coaching so many people, that the most effective archetypal relationship with the new money honey is romantic. Now, I have coached a lot of people who have suffered some form of sexual trauma. I don't know if it's the people who hire me or if this is representative of the population at large, but it does seem that the majority of people have suffered sexual trauma. So this is not a predatory, you know, hypersexual partner who is going to trample your boundaries. This is going to be a very safe, loving relationship that actually is very helpful in reprogramming your romantic and relationship blueprint in the future. That's just another sidebar. So here's this beautiful guy who loved me, who wanted to be with me. And I had a very strong sense that I had the power. I was the gatekeeper in the relationship. He had always wanted to be with me, and I'd been pushing him away. So I asked him what he needed from me so that he could stay with me the way he wanted to. This was all intuitive. And he responded immediately, which is another, you know, useful characteristic of having money be a person, is you can have a conversation and get really useful information. So he said to me that he needed me to love him and to stop treating him like a monster. Now, I know that the idea of the love of money brings up a whole biblical kettle of fish, and I have a few things to say on that. First of all, love is not greed. It's not exploitation. It doesn't harm or hurt people. It is not scarcity-based. It is expansive. It is noble. It brings out the best in you as a human being. That is love. Love is love. Greed and all that other stuff is not love. So that's the first part. And then a friend of mine took a class in ancient Aramaic 2 years ago and specifically focused on that passage, and that's not what it ever said in the Bible anyway. What it really said was that the obsession and or the worship of money can cause trouble. And I would be the first one to agree with that. And in fact, not just that the worship of money can cause trouble, but it was written in the context of slaves. So if you worship money so much that you don't feed your slaves, you're gonna have trouble having healthy slaves. I don't think any of us would dispute that. And I don't think we really, despite what certain Republicans in the United States might say currently, I don't think slavery is an acceptable option. So they're actually, you know, just, it never ever said the love of money is the root of all evil and love is not evil. Mm. Soapbox over. The final piece was, so I made this agreement, not, and this is the interesting thing, not to finagle or manipulate or get more cash in my life, but because he was such a sweet, vulnerable, lovable person, and I didn't want to be a jerk. And he deserved love, and I didn't want to hurt him. So I agreed, because he was worthy of love. And it had nothing to do with cash. So the final step is we made an agreement. And next time he brought me a client, I would say thank you, because this is how he would give me gifts. This is how he wooed me, was he would give me clients. And what I was doing when I had this unconscious relationship with a monster was, imagine somebody gave you a sweater and your response was, ew, that color, ah. And that's kind of what I was doing, you know. He would send me a client, and when I would freeze and hem and haw and get all weird about stating my fee, it was like I was going, ew, gross, scary, embarrassing, it's a monster. I was ashamed of him, which is a really awful, unloving way to be. So I got it, and I said I would say thank you. And then the funniest thing happened is the next day, four people called me out of the blue to hire me. And they hired me at double what I had ever charged before. And honestly, it was so uncomfortable for me because I had built these years of neurological patterns where my mouth wanted to talk them out of the sale. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there observing myself, right, sitting on my hands, biting my tongue while everything in me is wanting to shove a sample session down their throat or, you know, nonsense. And I got to practice saying, this is my fee. And then the most difficult skill in the world, which is, and then shut up and let them decide for themselves. And I got, you know, the first one was really hard. The second one was less hard. And I just kept getting practice. And then very quickly, I had a full coaching practice, and I was raising my rates, and I was starting groups and getting waiting lists, and I traveled the world, getting married, 100 times in 100 countries, and I lead my exotic money goddess retreats in Bali, and I hop on a plane every, you know, few weeks to go across the country to visit my dad who has Alzheimer's.
Okay, well, wait a minute. you need to tell us, explain this about you getting married multiple times. What's the story with that?
I am kind of a relationship obsessed fool, and my best friend, the astrologer, will confirm that from an astrological perspective. And in fact, I had to make money a cute guy just so I could be nice to him. and I finally met my guy when I was already 45 years old. So, you know, men and women listening, dating actually gets better when you get older because people are grown-ups, and including you and me. And so I had this idea that, you know, I wanted to travel the world with the love of my life. And way back in 2012, I made a decision that I had to change my business to make room for that, like have far fewer private clients, digitalize everything so that I could leave and travel the world with the love of my life. I called that my make out with the cute guy around the world business plan. And I honestly met my husband, whose name online was Travel Guy, 8 months later.
So you made this idea to do this before he showed up.
Yeah, and by the way, I also spelled it out in my profile. I wrote, "This is my top secret fantasy for the two of us," in my dating profile that everybody can see, right? Because I've been doing e-commerce so long, so even my dating profile has e-commerce shtick in it.
Oh my gosh.
So I wrote, "This is my top secret fantasy for the two of us. Shh, don't tell anybody. I wake up in your arms in India, Italy, or Prague, and we make love. And then we check our email. And then we go to a museum or a marketplace, or we just get lost and we live like that for months." And I got to tell you, I attracted the most interesting, educated, worldly, awesome guys with that profile and married one of them 20 times so far.
Oh my gosh.
And so when I was in 2014, I was already 47 by then, I had just finished leading my goddess retreat in Bali, and my then boyfriend was in South Africa on a photo safari shooting animals with a camera, not a gun. And he would Skype me at insane hours, like at 3 or 4 a.m., so that he could get me in Indonesia. In fact, he almost got eaten by a lion just crossing from his house in the bush to the building that had the internet. And men are so funny because, like, I had already figured out that he was the one. He was the first guy I had dated in 10 years who didn't have an expiration sign above his head. And, but it had to, he had to almost get eaten by a lion for him to think, what kind of a guy does this just to talk to a girl, you know, for 5 minutes on a bad internet? She must be the one. That's how he figured it out. So he proposed to me, and I was like, well, first I freaked out because I knew we were getting married. I was, you know, I wasn't worried about that. I just thought it would take him a couple more years to figure it out. So when it came, you know, earlier than I expected, like all of my commitment issues came screaming to the surface. But I'd already decided. So I got home on a Thursday, picked him up on a Friday, and we eloped within 24 hours. And I thought, okay, that's that. And then a couple weeks later, he had an assignment in Puerto Vallarta and arranged for me to come too. So we called that our honeymoon. And we were down in Puerto Vallarta, and we were passing by their iconic cathedral, Our Lady of Guadalupe. And he said, "Hey, you want to get married again?" as a goof. And I was like, yeah, sure. My kind of, you know, the game in our relationship is he suggests things and I say yes, because it's always a great adventure. And a woman on our tour said, well, you know, I'm ordained in the U.S. And he said, great, you're going to marry us. So we walked to the front of the cathedral, took up our rings. Tammy Lee, our friend, you know, said some stuff about love. Devin, my husband, made up some new vows. We always just make up our vows on the spot. And he said some new stuff that really landed in a deep, beautiful place with me. So I start crying because my husband, boy, he does wedding vows really well. And so I'm crying. We share our vows. We put on rings. People in the pews are giving us the thumbs up. We kiss. And it was amazing. It was like it was deeper the second time than the first time. And we came out and we were euphoric, like, oh my God, we have to do this everywhere. We have to get married in temples and mosques and a yurt and standing stones and mud huts. We need to experience love everywhere. And within a day, he proposed that we get married 100 times in 100 countries. And we just had this amazing Mayan Mexican magical wedding in Manzanillo. How many M's can I get in there? And honestly, like, I'm such a bad bride. I've never spent more than $20 on a white lacy dress. Sometimes I forget to pack shoes or brushes. You know, I've combed my hair out with my wedding veil. So I'm a horrible bride. But in my experience is that it's not the venue. It's not the dress. Really, it's the relationship and the vows. Mm. And by accident, I've had a bunch of big fairy tale weddings that I didn't plan and I didn't expect because my husband's a travel writer. Some tourism boards in different countries have just spontaneously offered us these magical, beautiful weddings. So sometimes it's in a castle and costumes and foreign languages and customs. And sometimes it's just my husband and me in a hotel lobby or a park bench saying, here, can you read this script? And it's just a beautiful relationship practice that I think everybody should do. It's cheaper, honestly, than like one big expensive party wedding, at least in LA. And I think that those big expensive weddings, and by the way, if that's what you want, go for it. That's what I wanted when I was in my 20s, not when I was in my 40s. Yeah. It's a lot of pressure for a baby marriage. Yeah. So, you know, just for who we are, it's really nice to keep getting married and saying this is important to us. And for me, being an insecure attachment theory kind of person, well, I'm across the board. Sometimes I'm insecure, sometimes I'm secure, and sometimes I'm avoidant. But it's really nice to keep being reminded that I'm loved.
You've taken this thing that has so much pressure and is such a fleeting thing, and there's really a lot of anxiety around it, right? Like, a lot of people feel so much pressure to get it right, and then it happens and it's gone. And you guys have taken away all the anxiety around it and dialed the romance up. And then the best part is you get to do it over and over again. So it's never in the rearview mirror, you know? It's like pulling you through the relationship instead of being this, you know, gun that goes off at the beginning of the race. It's this.
Yeah. I don't think any wedding can live up to the pressure of you only have one and you have to have it perfect. And I don't think weddings were supposed to be like that. It's really supposed to be about the marriage, not the party. When we were in Serbia, because my husband had a childhood friend from LA whose mom was Serbian, and he moved to Serbia and then fell in love with Eastern Europe's biggest pop star. It's kind of like their Madonna, Baby Doll. And we got married there, and his friend wanted a dual wedding. So, okay, I have 100, I can share one. And we, you know, the guests were all the friends of Devin's friend. And I don't know why, maybe they were just really drunk. But when my husband started saying his wedding vows, which, by the way, were beautiful, a bunch of wedding guests started booing.
Really?
I kid you not. I've never heard of such a thing. They started booing. I wanted to, like, walk down the steps on my little kitten heels and punch somebody out. I was, it was astonishing. And in that moment, I realized that I wasn't going home with any of those people. I was going home with the prize who was standing right in front of me. And I really got in that moment that the wedding is not about the venue or the food or the guests or the dress or anything. It's nobody has the power to ruin your wedding unless you give it to them, because really all that matters is you are going home with this person that you choose. You get the prize. Oh, and by the way, you know, I was talking about, you know, personifying money, and I'm just like you. My business, she's a person. The book I'm about to write, she's another person. they all have their personhood. I don't even create it. They just let me know. And so because this singlehood and this loneliness has been the greatest pain in my life. You know, I've been looking for my guy since I chased Brian Patterson under the piano on his 5th birthday, and he was the older man. So about 2 months before I met Devin, I did my money process, but I did it with a love monster. Because it was really annoying, because I could hear myself on interviews like every week saying, well, you know, if you're doing everything right and you aren't getting the results, you're protecting yourself. And so you want to uncover what you're protecting yourself from and turn it into a monster and then get rid of the monster. And I would hear myself saying that, and I'd be actually thinking to myself, like, that's what's going on with love. But it took me a really long time to finally break down and do the process with love, because that was a really big monster, like even bigger than the money monster. And I honestly believe all money issues are love issues. So I was going to a deeper level, and it was so big and so terrifying that it was just so big I didn't know how I could destroy it or get rid of it. But I did, you know, I gave it my best effort, and I met my husband a couple months later.
I wondered if you had reverse engineered this process for the love
oh, yeah.
itself, and because there does seem to be a trajectory with your relationship that does kind of parallel what happened with your financial life, your financial relationship, and also followed it in a really, I mean, we could write a book about this. Maybe you are writing a book about this. You said that you're writing a book. What's your next book about?
Oh, my next book is called Money Goddess. It's a spiritual manifesto for women's personal and economic empowerment. I've been leading my Money Goddess retreats for, I guess, 8 years now. And then I did a live event in LA and a virtual class before that. And I've just been developing this material for years, because I have coached, always coached men. But I have more personal experience being a woman. And so my Money Goddess program, my Money Goddess experience was addressing the, okay, you change the relationship with money, and then what comes up for women? And Our relationship with our sexuality, our bodies, our beauty, our lovability is the first thing that comes up for women. And then our making like peace with and with our victim experience and finding our life purpose. Our rage that we're not allowed to have in society. We're not, you know, we're not supposed to be angry or vengeful or shrill harpies, right? So there's a lot of behavior that, you know, where we distrust if we're ambitious, like evil Lady Macbeth. So there's a lot of human experience that women are supposed to not have, that we get a lot of shit for. Pardon my language. Honestly, I've really liked to swear like a sailor, and I've been behaving very well.
You can.
thank fucking God.
I should have told you at the beginning.
but yeah, you know, it's like all my life I've been told what's wrong with me, and I've come to the conclusion that it's not wrong. It's female, and there's a difference. So there, I have a really, especially after the last year, just a fire in my belly about really giving human beings permission to access all of ourselves. And there's a power and a gift. There's a superpower in all of it, in our appetites and our rage and our competition and ambition and our victim experience is sacred. And all of it has these amazing gifts and also wounds. So this book is really about what it is to, I want to change the conversation about what it is to be a woman. And by the way, it applies to men and all genders too, but this one is specifically speaking to people who identify as women, using goddess archetypes, which creates, I think, a nice nobility for our experiences that we've been shamed for. Oh yeah, you're calling me a slut? Well, there's a goddess for that.
Right.
And I embrace that.
Yeah.
This is a powerful, lust is a life-affirming feeling. So that's what I'm working on next is, honestly, I want to create a global money goddess movement of women who love themselves and respect themselves and are the drivers in their life, because I think that will be good for the planet.
I wanted to ask you about something called the Results Accelerator Program. Can you tell me about that?
Oh, yeah, that's my newest thing. So here's a problem, and I'm really telling on myself here, which is, so for all these years, you know, I coach people or they coach themselves and they get this beautiful, luscious, alive, money, honey, experience relationship. And then it kind of fades away.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause even, why do you think I get married all the time? Maintaining a relationship, mm-hmm. even a human being, takes a lot of attention and maintenance. And it's hard enough with a human. It's much harder with an imaginary person who doesn't have a body. So I've been really thinking about, well, how do I solve this problem of reconnecting people to their money, honey, on a regular basis? And that's how this developed. And surprisingly, a lot of people who haven't done my money, honey work have signed up for it because it's not really required. But then when they get in, they want it. And I have tools inside the program to help them slay their money monster and connect with their money, honey. But it's a daily practice where people log in every day and they set their daily priorities with their money, honey. And then when negative self-talk comes up, they share that, and then they share what their money, honey says to them. And this, it's like the negative stuff is a trigger to wake up the money, honey, so he or she can show up and respond. And that's where like the most people come up with the most brilliant insights because they're channeling their highest wisdom, but without any of their own baggage, which is one of the reasons making the money honey another person separate instead of, you know, your future self or higher self or something, but making it, you know, experiencing it as outside of yourself kind of clears it of all your nonsense and gives you a much more loving and accurate assessment and encouraging assessment of you, because your money honey will always recognize that you are more powerful, creative, and resourceful and wonderful than you see yourself. And if it doesn't, it's not a money honey. So this results accelerator, I wanted to have like a really just accessible, super, super high touch, high engagement, accountability, support, online love club. That's not about dumping more information, because we're, you know, just all the information that we're trying to get through can become oppressive, but to just support you really personally every day. That's what I created a few months ago, and the results have been like beyond my wildest dreams. Really just people feel loved and supported, and they're having results and breakthroughs and stuff that they've been struggling with for years. It's very gentle. I talk about progress, not perfection, and shrinking things down to baby steps. And when people are rewarded, then it becomes addictive. So these, you know, positive actions suddenly become the things you've been putting off. Suddenly you want to do them because you want to get the recognition and the love and the support. And then you also start getting great results in your life. So it just snowballs. So that's my results accelerator. That's my new thing.
Very cool. I was actually going to ask you at one point about addressing that whole idea of what happens when the honeymoon is over, so to speak, you know, and that definitely answered that question. I do have a question for you, though. This is some form of this I like to kind of ask everyone. And, you know, obviously you're no stranger to all the personal development programs and conversations and new age tools and all that stuff. You've been in it and with it and swimming in that ocean for a while. Is there anything that you find yourself thinking is really either bugs you about the whole kind of personal development landscape, or something that you always want to grab the microphone and shout, you know, to correct the conversation? What's something like that comes up for you?
I've had a number of what I would call dark nights of the soul, where I just have like wanted to pull out of the industry because I see some people who talk a really good talk and do a lot of harm, and I don't want to be that, and I don't want to be confused with that or associated with that. And I was going through, because I apparently am just freaking empathic, but there was that, I think his name was James Arthur Ray or something. The weekend that he was doing his demagogue, murderous, you know, smoke tent or whatever it was, thing where all those people died, I went into just, and I didn't know what was going on, but I went into a dark, dark, dark place. And I honestly had to like create a whole new monster about the industry and the stuff that I couldn't be with, and slay that and kind of create a new relationship with being in the business with a new money honey. It was like, well, you know, the thing about, you know, the money honey is that by definition, my money honey shares my values. So, yeah, I don't even know how to articulate it today. I'm kind of jet lagged. I just got back from a 2-day conference last week with, you know, like 100 really high profile multi-six and multi-seven figure coaches. And everybody thinks that they're a good guy, right? Mm-hmm. But what happens is even people at that level, and often people at that level, are scared. Like they had a few years of really big results, and then the market changes and they become more and more transactional. Mm. And it's, you know, people think that more dollars is going to solve problems, and no, the stakes just get higher. So now they have like all these employees to pay and the money isn't coming in. So the challenge is, you know, when people are coming from scarcity, they can become more transactional than relational. Do your due diligence before you hire people, you know, run their name and maybe add scam when you Google it to, you know, see what people are saying. Trust your gut. That's a big one, because some of, you know, sociopaths are very good salespeople because they can promise anything because they don't really care about delivering it. So something can sound really, really promising intellectually. Trust your gut. I think our guts really know. There are some really, really great coaches out there and some not so great coaches, and things that used to work really well, like product launch formula and telesummits and, you know, things like that, are not working as well as they used to. JV launches, not working as well as they used to. And I don't know that that language is being represented by the people selling those formulas yet. Mm-hmm. So I'm gaining, this is very rambling because I hadn't really, you know, but I'm gaining just a real deep, deep appreciation for the original old school pure form of coaching, which is not telling anybody what to do or telling anybody how to do things, but is really just through conversation drawing forth your own answers, because you know what you do and what you believe and what you value and what you want better than anybody else does. And you want to be able to communicate with integrity to be successful in business. And that, what I'm seeing is that the purest, most relationship-oriented people with the best integrity are weathering the market changes a lot better than the people who are being transactional and treating clients like objects and dollars.
Thank you for that. I always love asking that question because it does produce an interesting improvisational unearthing of wisdom. And I actually personally took a lot from that. So I got a lot from what you just said, if no one else does. So thank you. Listen, Morgana Ray, I'm such a huge fan of yours. I really am. It's a thrill to capture a conversation with you. I want to make sure that you tell everyone where they can go online to find you and where they can start working with your material.
Ah, absolutely. Lots and lots of high quality free stuff at MorganaRay.com. Start with my 4-part free video series. Also, my blog has hundreds of articles and videos. And when you opt in for the video series, you will be on my VIP list where I can curate and send you, you know, my newest articles or things that I think would be helpful for you to, you know, read or see. Whenever I have any freebies, you'll be the first to know about it. When my results accelerator sessions open up every you can't get in except once every 4 weeks. You'll hear about that when I go back to do another Money Goddess retreat. You'll hear about that. But mostly it's just content. And you can opt out at any time.
I apologize for the abrupt cut there. We had a little Skype glitch at the end of the interview. And then we went into a cool little personal chat session about witchy stuff. And I even got some dating advice from Morgana, which was cool. Of course, Morgana said thank you and to tell you guys to start with her 4-part video series and stay in relationship with her through her email list. She'll have lots of great content coming your way. And of course, I'll put all those links in the show notes for you. For show notes, links, and all the past episodes, please visit shiftyourspirits.com. You can subscribe in iTunes or Stitcher or whatever app you use to access podcasts. If you'd like to get an intuitive reading with me or download a free ebook and meditation to help you connect with your guides, please go to sladeroberson.com. And if you're interested in my professional intuitive training program, you can start the course for free by downloading the attunement at automaticintuition.com. Before I go, I promise to leave you a message and answer to a question or a concern you may have. So take a moment to think about that. Hold it in your mind or speak it out loud. I'll pause for just a few seconds right now. I want you to remember that all things can be attained, and that being in true abundance also means giving anything of value. It could be your time or holding space for someone who just needs a witness. When you share whatever it is you have that someone else may need, it ensures the flow of abundance for all of us. And I'll talk to you later.